Thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone, for being in the room today. Thank you for the wonderful students from the London Business School. I feel very, very humbled to be in front of you. And I'm also very thankful that they put me before rather than after Leon, the rocket scientist, who I'm sure is going to give a very, very exciting speech. So when I think of the two words capitalism and magic together, what I think about is I think about a platform for human beings to make the impossible possible. Because capitalism was really started to make people's lives better. And Ralph Waldo Emerson put it so eloquently when he said that doing well is a result of doing good. That's what capitalism is all about. And capitalism has made millions of people's lives better. Just even the last two decades, it's lifted over 1 billion people out of poverty. And I remember I had my huge light bulb moment with capitalism probably in the mid-90s. And I was really fortunate to be working in South Africa with a mobile phone company. And we launched one of the world's first prepaid services. And we reached our annual target in 1 month. So we went into the township to find out why this happened. And we found the most unbelievable display of entrepreneurship I've ever seen in my life. You had people selling phone calls from their phone on the street corner. You had them selling them from briefcase phones. You had them selling them from trailer phones. And to me, it totally shifted my lens about business. It embedded in me the thought that business has such a great power to drive change in the world, to listen to the right people, to get the right tools in the right people's hands, and then to watch them lift themselves out of poverty. And for me, the simple mobile phone that's now, I think, in 7 billion hands has radically changed the world. It's now a doctor, it's a bank, it's an insurance provider, and it's radically changing people's lives. So if capitalism was started to make people's lives better, and it is making people's lives better, why on earth, when you Google capitalism, do we get these kind of images? And for me, again, it was a wake-up moment just a few months ago when we were, how serious this is, how serious the thoughts of capitalism from a negative connotation are. When we were sitting in a room of people, we brought together about 20 CEOs to talk about the well-being of people. These were companies that had done fantastic stuff with their people. And we were in a restaurant talking about the well-being, and you could see that the woman that was serving the drinks and the food was listening in on the conversation. And when I went to leave that day, I saw this woman standing in the hallway, and she was weeping. And I went up to her and saw if she was okay, and asked her why she was weeping. And she said to me, "I never thought that businesses cared about their people." And just that simple statement, "I never thought that businesses cared about their people." How did we get to that point? And whilst capitalism has done so many great things in the world, it's also been the root cause of many of the problems that we're facing today. And if you look, for example, the financial crisis is the most obvious one. But also from an environmental perspective, not just global warming, but if you look at that silent storm that's brewing, that's really going to be the headlines of tomorrow, every single one of our major ecosystems is in decline right now. And if you look at the wonderful scientist Rockström, who got together with a group of scientists to put together the planetary boundaries, 9 planetary boundaries, that were really the safe space for humanity to operate in, we're already over many of those planetary boundaries right now. Things like the amount of nitrogen in the world, also things like climate change, biodiversity loss, we're over those, and we don't really understand what the implications of that is to human beings. But it's not just about some of the root causes of issues. It's also that we're not trusted anymore. As business people, we're not trusted. If you look at the Edelman study that was just recently done, they interviewed over 33,000 people in 27 countries. And what came out really clearly is that people don't trust both government leaders and business leaders to make the right moral and ethical decisions. They don't trust us to change course when something's wrong. And how many people in this room right now would ever want to be trusted only 20% of the time to tell the truth? Is there any of us that would ever want that? No. Yet that's what people think about business leaders today. So there's a lovely, actually, when Mo Ibrahim was launching the B Team, he had a lovely quote, because he's talking about how we live in such a transparent and radically interconnected world. And then he came back and he said, if we're going to be naked, we better look good. And certainly, we don't look good right now. If you look at those images and you look at how we're not trusted, and I've been asking the question for the last 3 or 4 years, why? Why has capitalism that started to be such a force for good and has been such a force for good in the world today, why do we look like we are killing love and we're not trusted? And 99% of the time, what people say to me when I ask that question is, greed is human nature. Greed is part of human nature. So how can we change that? Greed is part of who we are. And then the 1% of people say to me, no, greed actually, yes, is part of human nature, but we've amplified that part of human nature by the types of systems, the types of incentives that we've built, and we've amplified that part. And Barry Schwartz recently gave a TED Talk, and he said it so eloquently, where he talked about how we design human nature through the design of the institutions that we create. So what kind of human nature do we want to design for the future? And so I think if we step back as capitalists, we want to design something that's going to be positive for human nature going forward. And I think if we all just stepped back for a moment and thought, almost catapulted ourselves 50 years into the future, and we're talking to that next generation that was coming up into the future, and when they asked us the question, how could you commit the ultimate crime and steal from future generations for individual gain in the present? What would be our response? How could we answer some of those questions when they asked us why? And how could they answer some of the questions when they asked us why have we created some of the incentives to really amplify greed in human nature? And I just want to take you through some of those incentives, just 5 examples of some of the incentive structures we've created. And the first one is really we've built our wealth off the back of Mother Nature. So we've built our wealth on Mother Nature's services, yet we don't account for those in our bottom line right now. So if you look at a study done by Teeb, they found that over 2 to 4.5 trillion of Mother Nature's services every year are either lost or destroyed. And they took a simple insect like the bee and looked at that bee's service of pollination in the agricultural sector. And they found that those small bees were actually delivering $190 billion worth of value to the bottom line in the agriculture sector. Yet we're killing those bees through the fungicides and the pesticides we use. And if you look just in the U.S., they did a study about the impact of the decline of bees on the agriculture sector in the U.S., and they found a loss of $15 billion for the agricultural sector. So now flip that on its head. And imagine a world where every single business accounted for the natural resources it used. Like Puma, for example, in the recent EPNL, the environmental profit and loss statement that it came up with. So incentive number 2. So we all know that carbon is bad for the environment, yet what we continue to do is subsidize fossil fuels to the tune of over $500 billion, and then renewables only to the tune of about $90 billion. So again, if we flip that on its head, can you imagine putting that innovation and research behind renewables to come up with clean energy sources for the world? So incentive number 3, we continue to reward short-term focuses and short-term earnings. And McKinsey did a recent study where they interviewed 100 board members and 100 C-suite executives. And what they found really clearly is that 86% of those people that they interviewed felt that a longer-term horizon would be better for their bottom line. And 63% felt like in the last 5 years, rather than decreasing pressure on short-term, we've been increasing pressure on short-term. Now again, step back and imagine a world where we followed in the path of Paul Polman from Unilever, the CEO of Unilever, who just recently said, no, I am not going to present on quarterly earnings anymore. I'm going to build my business for the long term, for the future generation. And then incentive number 4. The other thing we're seeing in the world is that the gap between pay is continuing to grow. So if you look from 1978 to 2011, what they found is that CEO pay increased by over 720%. Almost more than half the growth in the stock market. But if you look at an average worker in the US, their pay only grew by 5.7%. So what we're getting is this situation where in the last several years, the CEO pay has been somewhere usually between 300 to 400 times that of their average worker in their organization. And it's not the gap itself that's the issue, because there's always going to be a gap. There's always going to be a gap based on experience, based on skills. But it's the growing size of the gap that has the, it will potentially undermine society over time. But I think it's also not just that gap, but it's the focus that we have on why do we continue to focus on financial benefit as a primary reward for work. And it's funny, because every time I do an interview now and I ask the question, why are you leaving your last job? People say back to me, it's because my values don't match the values of the company that I was working for. When I ask, what do you want out of your next job? Almost everyone says, I want work that's meaningful. I want work that's going to make a difference in the world. I want to be part of a company that I feel part of a family rather than part of an institution. So I think people are desperate right now to turn this upside down and look at things beyond monetary rewards to make sure that we're motivating people in companies. And the last warped incentive that I wanted to run through was really about customers, because we're also incentivizing customers on the wrong thing. We have turned it from being the customer is king to consumption is king. And again, having people buy things to demonstrate their value and encouraging people to buy things through sales, through deals, etc. And again, if we flip that on our head, we have such an opportunity in the world right now with how interconnected we are and how with social media to communicate with our customers, to have a relationship with our customers, and to build products and services in partnership with them that are going to make their lives better and make a better difference in the world. So I just want you to shut your eyes just for 1 second. And I want you to step back and think about that question again, and think about that question about if you were talking to that future generation 50 years out from now. And think about, rather than them asking the question of why, think about them thanking you and saying thank you for being part of a group of people that reimagined capitalism to put the magic back into human nature. And you can open your eyes now, because the great news is that it's happening all around us. There are thousands of businesses out there right now that are emerging that truly put people and planet alongside profit and are starting to grow this movement about a new way, a better way of doing business. These are just some examples of some of those businesses. For example, disruptors that go in and turn an industry upside down. M-Pesa is a great example of that. Vodafone put together a new banking service in Kenya. Now 31% of Kenya's GDP travels over that M-Pesa service. Or organizations in the sharing economy like Airbnb that already has 11 million guests that have come through its services. Or social enterprises that are built to really put the profit back into scaling the response to the issue. Grameen Bank and Muhammad Yunus are probably the best known in that area, the big issue in the UK. And really exciting good investors that have emerged. Acumen Fund that has been there for decades now. But also in the UK, organizations like Big Society Capital. How exciting to see the work they're doing with the social impact bonds, working with government to really create a new approach, a new way to look at human services delivery. Fantastically exciting stuff happening right now. But it's not just about new businesses. It's also about existing businesses transforming. And again, we're seeing so many great things happening, like the fantastic late Ray Anderson from Interface, who transformed Interface as a carpet company. Or Eco Imagination, who started up a whole arm to look at how they could create new environmentally friendly products. And now that arm is now generating $130 billion worth of revenue for them. Or people like Paul Polman, who stepped back, he came into his CEO post 5 years ago, and he stepped back and said, I want to turn my business into an organization that's going to serve society. And he turned his whole company upside down to make sure that that company was going to serve society. And then the other exciting thing that's starting to emerge is that companies are starting to listen to Mother Nature. They're starting to learn from Mother Nature and her 3 billion years of research. And you can see companies, like there was a fantastic train company that looked at a kingfisher's beak, and it then took that beak and created the same front end of its trains. And because of that efficiency that the kingfisher has, it now saves about 30% of energy use on that train. Or if you look at Zimbabwe, Eastgate Shopping Center built, they looked at a termite mound and saw how the termites keep the temperature at exactly the same level during the day and during the evening because of these vents that they open and shut. And they built a shopping center with that same, with the same tools. And now that shopping center uses 35% less energy and was a lot cheaper to build. Or you can see Sharklet. They found that the skin of a shark actually doesn't hold any bacteria. So they mimicked that texture, and now they're making surfaces in hospitals so that the bacteria doesn't stay on the surfaces of hospitals. So really exciting things of learning from Mother Nature, and Janine Bynus has done some amazing work in this area. But the great thing is that we're finding, in looking at business in a radically different way and reimagining it, it's actually good for business. There's been so many studies now that show and that track a high sustainable company against a low sustainable company. And what they're finding again and again is that the companies that have a high level of sustainability outperform those with a low level of sustainability. So the movement's happening, and the movement's starting to get even more momentum. But I think we all in the room have a responsibility to look at how can we be part of that movement? How can we make sure that we're helping speed up this movement? And how can we make sure that we're bringing, as Adam Smith said so eloquently, we're bringing humanity back into capitalism, that we're also bringing in empathy back into capitalism, that we're bringing moral courage back into capitalism. And I think this room and all of you have so much power to help truly reimagine capitalism, to bring back that magic in Mother Nature. And you all have the power to go out there and look at how do we truly re-engineer and reinvent the incentive structures that we've created for this system that has the power to do so much good in the world. How do we really start treating people like people rather than as numbers and headcount or a cost on our balance sheets? How do we start celebrating these amazing leaders like Paul Polman and others that are coming out with these amazing new ways to do business that are changing the world every day around us? And I think most importantly, how do we look at ourselves? How do we reimagine ourselves and our own human nature? So we realize the urgency and the importance of becoming part of this movement, and so that we can truly reimagine capitalism to be the force for good in the world that it was meant to be, and so that we can hold our heads and be proud to be called capitalists and business leaders. So thank you very much.